Hi, Ariel. Welcome back to the podcast.
Good to be here.
There are a lot of questions about whether we've had the same sort of reckoning as New Zealand when it comes to the Christchurch massacre. But if we take you back to that day, you were working as a journalist and you saw the story unfold.
That's right. So at the time I was working at the ABC, and I have this really strong memory of being in the newsroom on that day as the news started to trickle in from New Zealand, the scale of the horror, the families that were trying to find out what had happened to their loved ones in these two centres in New Zealand, and then realising that the man who had committed the act was Australian. And, you know, reporters all over the country started to dig into that online footprint he'd left behind and found those connections to Australian far-right groups online that had, I guess, just been coming to public consciousness in a way. It was really striking too, I think, my recollection of how the propaganda he'd created around his act started to spread. He had a Facebook live stream of the act itself. He had his manifesto, and it just spread before our very eyes. It was really disconcerting and I think really left a lasting impact on me and my reporting.
A lasting impact on you. How did you see that realization also impact just the conversation in Australia?
Well, I think on that day, as we started to reckon with his Australian origins, there was a lot of investigation of who he was, where he'd come from, this rural city town in New South Wales. He'd also traveled a lot internationally. He'd made donations to overseas far-right groups. There was a large footprint, I guess, there to investigate. And we started to see that come out through, as well, of course, through the Royal Commission that New Zealand held. But I suppose a lot of people in the national security community, of course, in the Muslim community here in Australia and among journalists, we sort of expected perhaps to see on the Australian government side perhaps more of a public reckoning about who this man was, whether he'd ever been identified by intelligence services here, whether there was anything from Australia's end that could have been done to intercept him, to stop this attack from going ahead. But we've just had very little public reckoning, I suppose, of exactly what happened and that man's Australian links.
And that does compare to what New Zealand has done.
Yes, of course, in the wake of the attack in 2019, New Zealand quickly held a royal commission. There has been an ongoing coronial inquiry, so there's still a public reckoning, I suppose, of exactly what happened and what could have been done to prevent it. Too, in New Zealand, that concerns, of course, intelligence services, gun licensing rules, etc. But yeah, I suppose too, his Australian origins and links to far-right groups here too brought that home for me and made me wonder too, you know, exactly what kind of breeding ground had happened here for the terrorist as he was growing up.
And since then, it's been 7 years. The propaganda that the attacker filmed, you've seen come up in separate, completely unrelated cases.
That's right. So as part of my reporting here at The Guardian, I do track certain cases associated with extremism or terrorism offences. And you know, here in Australia, the government has regularly raised the alarm about the number of young people showing up in these cases. So there was a case in South Australia when a boy was 14. He had downloaded more than a dozen videos of the terrorist attack that happened in Christchurch. He was sentenced last year for possessing documents with information for terrorist acts and extremist material. And he also had the shooter's manifesto. A few years earlier than that, I was reading about the case of a 16-year-old in South Australia who had sentenced for several terrorism offences, and the judge commented in that case on his activities on Discord, which is kind of a chat platform that included sharing material from the Islamic State and modern-day Nazi groups, in the judge's words, as well as images from the Christchurch killings that left 51 people dead. I've read about sort of animated recreations of the attack, and it's always extremely troubling, of course, to see these cases and this material show up in matters concerning young people, especially.
There were efforts to try and remove that material online.
That's right. So in the wake of the attack, there were a number of laws passed, including a law that penalised platforms for failing to rapidly remove content that involved terrorism, murder or torture. It was called the Abhorrent Violent Material Act. and it didn't try to impose fines on those platforms. So that was passed, and that was in reaction to the spread of the Christchurch terrorist propaganda. But, you know, it's a cat and mouse game. We see this continued issue with online platforms and the way that this material can simply be shared and obfuscated.
One person you did speak to, Hank Terran, Chief Executive of Open Measures, he seemed to suggest that there was a lot more Australia could be doing to stop people from becoming radicalised.
That's right. So Hank Terran, he's the Chief Executive of a group called Open Measures. They're an open source threat intelligence platform, and they track the spread of a range of far-right material on different platforms. And he suggested to me that the terrorist propaganda continued to be spread because it was framed very intentionally under the guise of this great replacement conspiracy theory, the claim that there is a plot to overtake white Christian European countries with immigrants, or generally a group that can be countenanced as the other. So he said in the Christchurch context that other was Muslims. The Poway synagogue shooting in California a few weeks after the Christchurch shooting, it was Jews. The El Paso shooting in Texas, it was people of Latin background. And he argued, as someone that tracks this material regularly online, the public response can't just be content moderation or deplatforming, just the cat and mouse game of trying to get this content offline, or even age restriction, which of course Australia has, that's the road we've gone down in recent years. He said it was more about disrupting that pipeline from passive exposure to active planning for young people especially, and that requires more proactive education amongst parents and the community to understand what kind of spaces their families might be spending time in online, and the groups they might in fact be meeting up with in person too.
There were commemorations in New Zealand. Is there also a sense that we lack ongoing grieving over this as well in Australia, like about public effort to continue to grieve?
That was certainly the view of some people I spoke with. I spoke with Rita Jabri Markwell. She's the legal advisor to the Australian Muslim Advocacy Network. And she suggested to me that Australia's leaders have kind of failed on Christchurch to help us remember that terrorist attack, that tragedy together, to grieve what happened together, she says. And she says too, there's been this lack of accountability in her view for the role that what she called official language played in the terrorist radicalization. If you think about this man growing up in Australia in, you know, the 90s, 2000s, this was a time of extremely heated rhetoric about Muslim people. This is the era of the war on terror led by the United States. There was a lot of very, pointed targeting of certain immigrant groups in Australia at the highest level of politics. And this is the kind of cultural and political milieu that he grew up in. And she wishes there could have been some accountability, some examination of that.
And many years later, we have seen a shift again in political rhetoric here in Australia.
That's right. I think with Australia's attitudes, you know, and language around immigration in politics and the media, you know, what's old is new again. We see these cycles where immigration becomes one of the sort of hot button issues, I suppose, for some parts of politics. We're seeing again the leakage of language that starts on the far right into our mainstream political discourse. I think can think of terms like re-migration. This is this far-right idea that non-white populations should be deported from so-called European countries back to their countries of origin. This is the kind of language we see leaking. You know, the borders are ever more fuzzy. And so it is a dangerous time.
It starts on the edge and then it becomes mainstream, basically,
yeah.
And acceptable. Ultimately, what sense do you get about why Australia hasn't had a reckoning?
It's a good question. I'm sure a lot of different people would have different answers. I think personally, because it didn't happen on our soil, it happened in New Zealand, that has allowed us in an official way to kind of elide that Australian connection, despite the fact that it was committed by an Australian who grew up here. That's one reason. I think too, there's just a unwillingness to grapple with the difficult questions that the Christchurch terrorist attack continues to raise for us.
Of the people you've spoken to, what have they said most about what concrete measures they might want to see now?
So in the years since the attack back in 2019, I have spoken to members of the Muslim community and advocates who have called for there to be a more formal, more public memorial, I suppose, of the event each year when March 15 comes around, more recognition, you know, even on the floor of Parliament, of what happened and what it meant to the Muslim community here.
Ariel, thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thanks, Rajat.
That was Investigations reporter Ariel Bogle, and before that you heard from Imam Ala El-Zukum of El-Zadiq Heidelberg Mosque in Melbourne. This episode was produced by Daniel Simo and Karishma Luthria. Sound design and mixing by Joe Koning. The executive producer of Full Story is Hannah Parks. Don't forget to subscribe or follow Full Story wherever you listen to podcasts, including on Spotify. I'm Rajat Ahmed. See you soon.